The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
Hey, and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 42. What a wild week we had. I mean, just really, we started out that week and it looked like everything was going to just crash and burn in the beginning. And then it seemed like all of a sudden a miracle happened. Like someone parted the Red Sea and said, you know what? Don't worry. We're about to buy and make this market go crazy, down 325 points at one time. And everybody, even Cramer and Santelli, everybody on TV was starting to bicker and freak out. And if you haven't seen that video, by the way, there's a great video. Rick Santelli from CNBC, a really level-headed guy. And he goes head-to-head with Jim Cramer on CNBC right before there was this rush and into the market and a turnaround. And I got to tell you, it's playing on our site now. There's a couple of videos, actually. One with Tim Sykes from Wall Street, on Wall Street, and the other one with Rick Santelli just blasting Cramer. And then, and also kind of an interesting play when he talks about, because Cramer said that, you know, have you been watching my show, Rick? The fact is I've been telling everybody it's a bear market and get out, when in fact, if you look at some of his history, he was bullish on the market for some time. So, you know, with that in mind, what I thought I would do is start the show today with a discussion about some things that are going on and what you can be doing to protect your portfolio or to enhance your portfolio, the returns. I've had a few emails come in about people asking me about, you know, what should we be doing right now, and tell me kind of, you know, is it a good time to get back in? Let me give you a couple of hints of that in a minute, and tell you what's coming up today. We have the founder and one of the principals of Covestor, which is a site that you can track your investment performance or watch other people's investment performance. His name is Ricky Tata, and he's going to be with us in a moment. And coming up, as I mentioned on our next show, episode 43, we have Chris Jolly, who is the head of the MS Money Central, or Microsoft Money, the entire finance division for them. And that's pretty exciting. He's going to share with us some of the great features of the Money Central site and really go through, I think, that, you know, where we can really benefit and how we can profit by using that site. So I'm pretty excited about that, actually. Today, we're going to also go into a little bit about where we can find some stocks. I put on the site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, a couple of screens. I call them Friday stock screens. And usually on Friday afternoons, I try to run a couple of these here and there. And I found a few that were interesting. One of them was a Momentum Earnings Up, if you want to take a look at that. And there's a couple other ones that one of them particularly that I think is interesting. It's a yield. In other words, a high yield, the top 25 highest yielder stocks from the S&P 500. And that's up there as well, along with the other videos and a few things. And if you haven't seen it yet, if you haven't been looking at the site, because you really should be going hand in hand looking at that site daily. If you enjoy my show on the site, there is a lot more information that we don't cover here. So make sure to subscribe to that, because that really is, you're going to fill in a lot of details. I mean, we talked about recently a few different stocks, for example, up right now, probably at the moment that you're listening to this, is an entire discussion about eBay and how eBay is probably going to continue to be a short. And really, when you look up at the last 2 years or so, it has been consistently falling for, I think it's almost 55%. And much of that could be attributed to the Skype acquisition that didn't seem to really do so well, overpaid for that tremendously. As great as the acquisition of PayPal was early on, it was just as bad. Meg Whitman is stepping down, probably a great time to do so. And I told you about it some time ago, if you've been listening, about my my personal experience with eBay in regard to selling a phone and trying to, you know, buy some and sell some electronics. And almost invariably, every time you get involved with them, there's some kind of a scammer trying to take your money, trying to intercept your auction. And as such, I lost a lot of trust from them. That's a big concern when it comes to eBay, because really, what is eBay if it's not trust between the buyer and seller? Now, I also received an email, a couple of emails, as a matter of fact, from people asking me about Apple, because, you know, Apple obviously had a dramatic decrease over the last couple of last week or so when they came out with earnings. And I find it very interesting, because it's almost like, if you think about this just for a moment, much of the stocks out there that we saw really just having incredible momentum for some time, for example, the Apples and the Baidus and the Garmins and maybe even the Crocs, we've seen this interesting turn of events, and we've seen this before. We saw this really in the 1997, 1998 time period, when all of a sudden value was tremendously out of play and growth stocks became extremely, extremely beneficial to investors. And if you remember, this kind of turn was so interesting and so apparent that everybody kind of left in a big rush from any of the value-oriented stocks, the blue chips considered in the banking and financial industry, some of the consumer staples, really the ones that are the go-gos in the technologies and maybe some of the service and healthcare related, and they kind of switched right over. And we saw this real suction out of the value-oriented stocks, and it's particularly the large caps, and they were underperforming tremendously as compared to the growth for the next couple of years. Now, this is very similar to what's happening right now. We saw this real interesting movement of the growth-oriented stocks, like the ones I just mentioned, and they were really kind of plowing ahead and just continuing to just, you know, gain day after day, week after week. And now, all of a sudden, if you notice, the rate environment has changed. When the rate environment changes, as I told you back in June, I said, when you see these rate decreases coming, you go and buy the home builders, you buy the financials. Obviously, you have to be selective, but you go and buy those. So when you look at Toll Brothers and KBH and or KB Homes, and you look at Pulte, and you look at just everything out there, you look at even E-Trade and for that matter, Bank of America, well, they really did well in this market right now, where on the other hand, we saw Apple and Garmin and Baidu. And again, these are not particularly names that we're holding, but just discussing the fact that those growth stocks are now rotating. And that may be not a 1 week or a 2 week or a 1 month situation. Realize when the economic climate changes, we see rotations of entire sectors that move from one area to the next, in and out. And it really creates a tremendous amount of a pain for people who are just holding on at all costs. Now, one of the things that I would be doing right now, for example, if you're holding any of these stocks, you may want to consider this. If you haven't done so, it's a little complicated, but you could do something that may either protect you or maybe even enhance your returns. And that is, let's suppose you own Apple as an example. Okay, so you own Apple and you have it and went up to 200. Now it's down to 130 or so, 135, and you're kind of upset about that. But yet at the same time, you're thinking Apple's going to be a good long-term play. What do I do at this point? Well, when stocks move down in that nature, right, you know, and they really take that hammering, what can you do? You can actually do something like sell a put contract. And what that does is give the obligation to you to actually go in and sell that stock to someone at a particular price sometime in the future. So what I mean by that is this. If, in fact, you said that, we're going to sell a put on Apple at 120, let's say, okay? Well, you may collect a premium of about maybe $5 per share. At the same time, you have the stock currently held at about 130. Well, if the stock continues down for some time and gets to 120 as an example, you may have to sell that to someone. They can buy the stock at $120 per share. You, on the other hand, held the stock anyway, right? Well, at that point, you're going to feel kind of miserable. I mean, you're going to feel kind of miserable, obviously. But at the same time, what you can do is you can collect some premium on the way down at least. Now, the better way to possibly do this is to sell in the money put. So what you do is you get a put at 135. Because that's already a significant value, a significant benefit that you're going to gain. The premium is going to be much, much higher. And right now, it may be, let's say, $12 for a three-month output. Now, if the stock rises, what's going to happen is that it will rise, and you will then, of course, gain all that money. Now, the only way you could do any of these strategies is if you already own the stock, because it's a quasi-covered position. And since you own the stock already, the risk is limited. And what you're doing is creating some excess premium for yourself in relation to the fact that you believe the stock is going up. Because if the stock goes up, you're just going to make the money on the stock if you just hold it. If you have the option and you do this kind of strategy and it moves up, the put will eventually be worthless. And the buyer of the put is going to be out there premium and you're going to get it. It's a kind of complicated strategy if you're new to investing. If you're a novice still, it's a little bit backwards because most people are accustomed to buying and buying puts and buying calls if they're going to use options at all. And some people, for the word option, is just, you know, you're turned off already and you can't listen anymore. But this is what the professionals do. This is what I teach. As a matter of fact, in that course that's coming up on the 31st, which I've told you about a couple of times, we've got a lot of people that are in that course. And I would suggest to you, it's a free course. And we're doing this with a tag team with Cyber Trading University. If you haven't signed up yet, go over to the Disciplined Investor site, click on the button that says free course and sign up right now. And we're going to actually, what's going to happen is right on your computer, we're going to do it all through the computer. It's really cool. And what you do is you just sign on that day. And after you're registered, we'll give you instructions on how to do so. You sign on. And what happens from there is that you're going to screen watch. You're going to kind of watch what I'm doing. And I'm going to teach you right on there from a combination of PowerPoint presentations directly from the web and show you a lot of these concepts we're talking about and give you kind of a taste of it. It's an introduction to the course. So make sure to sign up for that. But then the point is here that, you know, if you can understand how to use some of these strategies, you really can make some excellent money for yourself. Now, the problem is if you don't know how to use these strategies, you know what? You shouldn't be investing. If you don't understand how to use this, why are you doing this? Where are you going? You're just going to figure you're just going to buy all the time long and that's it? If you don't understand how to use all these various tools in your toolbox, you're wasting your time. But that's why I'm here to teach you. And that's what I want you to understand is you can use all these, but you have to take some time to be patient. Now is the time to be patient in the markets. Now, over the past few days, I received a good amount of email from blog subscribers and podcast listeners and my clients too. Because they've mentioned that they are very disillusioned and confused and horrified, in fact. And many others are really fed up, you know, no pun intended with that, with the Fed. And come to think of it, I don't think there were many that were even, well, in the least happy and, you know, and really kind of thrilled with the fact that the markets were even up throughout the end of the week. And it was rather obvious that there is a good deal of confusion out there. So, you know, on average, I believe that investors are looking for answers while they are having a hard time envisioning the future because, you know, for sure there are a few investors that really think that there's just going to be a quick correction and nothing to worry about. And, you know, you look at this and you think about, you know, really, well, who's to blame? I mean, you know, and a lot of people are saying, well, I want to blame somebody because is it the hedge funds? Is it the Fed? Is it the government? But when we really look at the situation that's developing, I don't think we should blame. Rather, we really need to find the long-term solutions here. And I guess the crap that's layered on top of the crud within the financial sector is really nothing new, nor will it ever stop, you know, unless we have any significant intervention. As we have been really recalling the savings and loan crisis of late and talking about much of the things of the past that related to that situation, I think that we forgot about the CMO meltdown about two decades ago and the rogue broker fiascos that we have witnessed during the past many years and the recent one that recently just happened. And, you know, let's not even bring up the forever banished names of long-term capital management or even Enron. But one particular email that caught my attention from a loyal podcast listener hit the proverbial head, you know, nail on the head. And it talked directly to the point that is not only the current administration's or even the old guard's fault that we are in such a disarray. The truth is that out of all of the current politicians vying for the coveted position of commander-in-chief, I don't think there's any particular name that brings any feeling of comfort. No one that is seemingly able to come up with anything more than political rhetoric and snippets is out there that doing anything, you know, because they're just out there trying to win some votes. But Fred S. wrote in and he says, I think that what is happening in the financial arena is immoral. The lust for profit above all else has gone too far. Capitalism succeeds only when trust and the spirit of fair play is maintained. We are at a critical inflection point, and I do not see any existing governmental authority figure who can inspire. Greenspan left quite a mess in his wake. Now he is off to the hedge fund, which is exploiting the downside of the easy credit conditions he himself enabled. The scenario is a microcosm of the morally bankrupt behavior that is commonplace. And Fred, thank you for writing that. I think that it was really very poignant. You know, and once more, I think we are in a crisis of confidence, one that will take time to heal. But be sure that once we are back and fully trusting the individuals and companies that help to create wealth, you know, those that are out there in the investment arena, they will. I'll be sure as I'm sitting here, once we get to that point again sometime in the future, they will assuredly cook up another scheme that brings on another financial implosion. Then the cycle will continue again and again and again. So I hope that makes you feel a little bit better. That's my little rant for the day. When we get back, we're going to be talking with Ricky Tata from Covestor to find out how we can actually track our investments and how you can get involved with you know, with understanding really who is doing what and who is doing it right and who is actually making some money out there, you know, putting where their mouth is. And you're listening to this on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Money, markets, and more, all on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success. Do you have an idea for a show? Comments and suggestions are always welcome. Write in to info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
Have you ever wondered, how do you find out if what they're telling you in the newspapers, on the media, on blogs, and various investment sites is really true? For example, you see all the time how many people are out there showing their returns, and they're saying that they've made 50 or 60% this year and 20% that year, and they picked this stock on this date and they called that short on that date. Well, how do you really make sure that they put their money where their mouth is? Well, you know what? We found a great site called Covestor, which is a great way for individuals to have accurate and audited tracking of their portfolio. And I gave a call, and he agreed to Ricky Tata, who is one of the founders and principals of Covestor. So, Ricky, thanks for joining me today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Hey, Andrew. It's great to be with you and tell you about what we're up to.
So I understand that Covestor really is all about understanding, you know, your trading habits, looking at other people's following. You know, instead of me explaining, why don't you tell me about Covestor?
Sure. Well, just for those that don't know, Covestor is a real trade sharing service. In other words, it allows investors to show what they're trading in and to be treated as professionals. Okay, so let me back up a bit and give you where the idea came from and why it's of such value and why we have such passionate users. It all comes from the fact that there are certain people in this world who love investing and who are really good at it. And frankly, they have their own. Let me take, for example, my cousin, who used to manage oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, and he just enjoys investing and sitting on top of his money and thinking about which companies to invest in. He maybe tracks 20, 30 of them. And I love it when he tells me what he's doing. Why do I love it? Because, frankly, he brings a whole slew of experience to his own investments. He's actually spending his own money, and he cares about his money. And I know my cousin, and I trust him, frankly, more than I trust necessarily a broker who's there to make a penny off me.
Turn.
I would start listening to my cousin, and I would start sort of saying, well, okay, if he's been buying this or if he's selling this, then I should really start tracking him because he's spending his own money. And then I said, well, actually, it's such a pain to ask him the whole time, well, when you're buying, when you're selling, what are you doing? What I'd like is some systematized way to just go, you know what, Kevork, whenever you're doing something, I'm just going to track. I'd just like to track it as well. I'm not going to give you all my money, but for 20 grand, 30 grand, I'd like to just have that money do whatever you're doing.
So let me understand. Let me interrupt you a second. So now what happens is, are you telling me that, so when your cousin makes a move in a stock or a bond, whatever he's doing, or in Covestor, that you can automatically trade that? Is that by phone?
Well, now let me back up. So this is let me back up before we jump into that, because it is a very exciting proposition.
Okay.
And people do get excited about it. Let me just back up and tell you sort of where we are. And so the goal is to say, hey, you know what? There's not just my cousin out there. There's, out of the 40 million people in the U.S. who have online accounts, I mean, maybe 500,000 to 1 million are really serious about investing. It's their money. And let's start treating them like professionals. In other words, because out of the founding team is myself and two partners. We all come out of the institutional finance world, out of the big institutional banks or asset management firms. And we say, you know what? There's no reason why a guy like yourself or some of maybe your listeners who are managing their own money have nowadays the same costs, the same tools, the same access to information as the professional sitting in a paneled room in Boston has.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we treat them like a professional, run professional institutional analytics over them, look at them as though manage their own money, as though they were managing a fund, and then let them open up and let them show the rest of the world what they're doing. And if they're good and people like their attitude and their risk profile and what they're doing, then yeah, sure. Why shouldn't you follow someone who's managing his own money? Surely that person has as much or as more credibility as a guy that's just giving advice.
Well, that's interesting because I, you know what's interesting about that. Let me just interrupt you for a second because it's interesting. I've been in this business for, I don't know, going on 20 something years now. And what I find, I think, the most interesting is that, you know, you can't really find, oftentimes you can't find track records and you can't find information about things that are even publicly available. For example, while mutual funds are obviously information through Morningstar, Microsoft Money, or a whole bunch of different places you could find the information, the fact is, oftentimes the information is extremely old and frankly stale. So how do you really go by that and utilize that information in your process? And I think that the difference, what I'm hearing here, is that you're actually able to see a lot more of the internal workings, kind of the guts of what they're doing with the rationale, et cetera, almost in real time. Is that a fair assessment?
Precisely. Mm. I think that's a very fair assessment, and you've hit the nail on the head. You know, mutual funds have to, by law, show what they're doing it once every 3 months, but it doesn't really, if you actually think about it, it's phenomenally little information that you receive before you make a decision in the tens of thousands of dollars. And what we're saying is, yeah, maybe the guys that run, get paid millions of dollars to run a mutual fund, really are unbelievable geniuses. But maybe they're not. Maybe you, with your own specialty, doing your own hard work, Andrew, in Florida, should be up there on a pedestal with the Steve Calhouns who run the Fidelity Aggressive Growth Fund or whoever. Maybe you should. But until someone comes along who's completely third party and says, okay, we're going to treat everybody as equal, regardless of their background, regardless of what they're doing, so long as they're really doing it with real money, not pretend, it's going to be real money. Until someone comes along as a third party and creates a level playing field, you'll never know. You'll never know if it's more risky or what exactly is going on under the hoods. And that's what we set out to do.
Yeah. Well, I noticed on your site you have, like, for example, so what you're saying is you have these rankings, and you could track what people are doing. You could see why they're doing it if they post their rationale, et cetera. So, you know, funny enough, I was doing research on, getting ready for this discussion, and lo and behold, number one is a very good friend of mine, Tim Sykes. He's the number one on your rankings list. Yeah, which is. I think I just talked to him a couple days ago. He was out at the Sundance Film Festival actually, and he's part of our new MoneyCast network, which we're setting up. He has a new thing called Tim Radio, which he's going to be doing for us. And he's the number one by extraordinary distance to number two.
Well, one second. Let me just quickly pull back on the reins here. We do actually have 150 different rankings. So in the sense that he's number one in some areas, and it really depends on what you're looking for. Because, some people say, I want a guy who doesn't trade every day, who's, a low turnover, or I want a guy who specializes in a particular sector, or a guy whose risk return is high, or someone who's got a portfolio of just a handful of stocks, because, if I want high diversification, I'll go to funds, or I want someone that just invests in funds. So we're very anti just, a single ranking.
Right.
If you actually look at our site, you'll find you can cut and dice our members hundreds of ways, and we had to limit it to 150 different rankings. So it's whichever race course you want to look at that you'll go and find the person good for you. And frankly, I like my view as to what I the sort of person I like to follow tends to be a little more conservative and less racy than other people's, and so I find I find the guys that attract me, and I go, actually, that's a really interesting guy spending his money. Maybe might not be the same guys that other people find.
Clearly, you're going to have you have your different type of portfolios, different type of investing process, et cetera. But, I guess the one I pulled up was the annualized that he was. And I wasn't giving him a plug or anything, but the point was I thought it was kind of funny that he was right there. So I want to ask you about how the actual trades are tracked. So take me through. I'm a member. I'm deciding that I'm going to enter a position. Let's just say it's ABC stock, and I'm going to enter 100 shares, okay? The process of going through that, is it a real time? Is it end of day? Is it, a delayed? How does it work?
We require, and this is where, people joke that we're the hardest website in the world to join. We require our members who are sharing their portfolios and their trading activities and decisions we require access to their real brokerage account. In other words, we don't take it on trust what you're doing. So we get a feed directly from their brokerage account, and that that's not for everybody. It's we go through an interbank process to get, as it were, the data as a feed direct from the brokerage account rather than from the member. But what it means is that someone signing up with us doesn't have to, doesn't, as it were, have to keep returning to the site or send anything. They just provide access to that brokerage information, and we get a streaming, of information whenever they do a trade, whenever they receive a dividend, whenever there's a corporate split. All the tricky back end corporate action data that we have to overlay on top to provide their real risk return calculations, and that's critical because it means we're not asking people to change the way they're working. Right. We're just saying, hey, just sign up with us, and we'll as it were, create a Morningstar style fact sheet for you as
for
an
you
individual.
Right for individuals. So now happens what happens with the information? I mean, is any I'm going to make a big leap of faith here and go with the fact that there's plenty of security and overlays of making sure that nobody can, at least as everything you've done to not breach the brokerage account. So let's just go past that for a moment. But what happens with, the question next was then what brokerage? Is anybody in particular that you can use, or is it pretty much almost anyone out there that you're getting it feed from? Do they have to use your brokerage account? What is the story there?
Frankly, we work best, and we're the most automated with the top 15. So the usual suspects in the top 15.
Right, that's fair enough.
Scott Trades, Ameritrades.
Okay, and then
some of the more specialized ones as well.
Okay, so all right, that's kind of interesting because I like that. I like because again, I think that you hit the nail on the head that there's you got to be able to trust the numbers. That's a big issue, particularly it's not only with this situation. Look at the U.S. markets, for goodness sakes. I mean, talking about trusting numbers and what's going on these days. So
what happened today?
It was ugly. It was ugly.
Wow, that took everyone by surprise, didn't it?
Yeah, it's not by surprise. Go back to July and listen to my podcast. I've been pounding the table since July to get out of the markets. I've been telling everybody that you really got to kind of clean your positions up and make sure not to just enter things just to enter. You have to be very careful right now. Okay, so now
it's so interesting you say that as of December, I should have probably listened to you back in July. But as of December, and if you look at my Covesta profile, you'll see as of December, I actually started to move heavily to cash. I just contain, there are still a few positions that I own, some for emotional reasons and some because I just think the value, I'd rather own them than own cash. But I definitely feel this is a time to be cautious. And personally, as a value investor, I think it's a time to start doing some hard work and sitting there, and you're going to be able to pick up some fabulous opportunities. Yep. But
I will chapter 2 of my book, The Disciplined Investor, talks all about the benefits, or really the lack of benefit, to emotional investing. I'll get you a copy very soon. Make sure that you don't hold on to those stocks for the wrong reasons. Don't fall in love with the stock because they don't love you. Trust me.
Very hard.
I understand. How does somebody join? Because you did say it's one of the toughest sites to join. I mean, I noticed that you have to be either invited or you have to have a special incarnation or you have to have something special to get invited. How does that work?
I was joking. We do have a hurdle in the sense that, there are two hurdles. One is you have to have a minimum of a $10,000 account. This is really to basically draw a line on, who's playing around and who's at least spending some serious money, so that you know that when people are making trades and talking about what they're doing, that there is some minimum level of activity. Although, frankly, the average size of our accounts is an order, significant order of multiple higher than that. Secondly, you've got to have a minimum account. Second, you've got to share your real trades. And for some people, that's a big psychological hurdle.
Right.
We allow people to have a screen name. In other words, you don't have to, the rest of the world doesn't have to know that your name's Andrew Horowitz. You can call yourself AH or whatever. But you're not anonymous to us. So in other words, we guarantee to everybody else that we've checked that you are really doing what you say you're doing. So you've got share real trades, and that's for a lot of people, they go, that's just it's just a big leap of faith. So maybe it's a lot of old school people that, you know, I just don't want to do this.
Yeah, cause I'll tell you something, Ricky. I see some real interesting, opportunity beyond the individual investor for this, because as a professional advisor, investment manager for many, many years, again, I've found it very difficult to find information on, you know, the internal workings on, you know, whether it's hedge funds and mutual funds and really the inner workings of other advisors that are, you know, making a variety of claims. And, you know, from a competitive standpoint, but also from a standpoint that if maybe I want to use what they have to provide a level of maybe alternative to a client, and somebody's asking me to review something, it's very difficult to find the information. And it's kind of, I could see additional applications of this to maybe the corporate world as well. I don't know if you're exploring that, but I do see that.
Well, do you know, I started this business with two partners, without whom I wouldn't be able to do this. And Simon Weingart, who runs our operations and technology, effectively the guts of making it work, his previous job was running a information services for a large fund of funds. So it was about a $40 billion fund of funds. They invested in 500 hedge funds for about 3,000 clients. So he comes from a world where he had the financial muscle to force the hedge funds to show some level of real data. Mm-hmm. And so what he's recreated for us is that, as it were, in a broader sense, taking the institutional lessons and applying it to, you know, to the broader world, so to let anyone be judged the same way. But the interesting thing is that we're coming from a world, and, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with your point there. We're coming from a world which is, in the U.S. alone, an $18 trillion business that is unbelievably opaque. I mean, mm-hmm. compared to the amount of information you have when you go to the movies to buy a movie ticket, the amount of information that someone gives you before they, you know, take away $500,000 of yours to manage is unbelievable. It's an extraordinary world, isn't it? If you think about how the size of the world and how rich the world is. It's not as though everyone's, you know, down on their uppers, you know, the asset managers are having to work tables at night to make the ends meet.
Absolutely.
So in some ways it's what we're doing is a little bit frightening. And some of the institutions that we talk to very keen on getting our data and very reluctant on sharing their data in the same pile. And some of them straight out said, you know, frankly, I'm not sure I'd look particularly good alongside other investors.
Well, they also don't want to give up the recipe. So, I mean, let's be honest, the recipe oftentimes is all you have to go by. You know, the only thing that you can really hold on to is the recipe and the quote unquote secret sauce to provide benefits. Right. Because, you know, in the end, that's all I really have as an advisor is I can really just give in order to make money for my clients is one thing, but where am I adding benefit? And that's obviously why people are paying me the amount of money they're paying me.
Well, let me go back on that one, because that's a very good point, because that has been raised by people. It's like, why should I sell the sausage machine when I can sell the sausages, type of thing? But the reality of Covesta is we don't tell you the machine. You don't have to say how it is you're coming up with the decisions. I mean, you can. It's up to you whether you choose to or not. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, knowing that you're going to buy something or sell something or wait a certain way, you know, wait for your portfolios a certain way or reduce risks a certain way, or make the actual output of the decision is not where the intellectual capital is. That's not why, frankly, that's not why someone's going to be giving you money. That's not why I'd give you money. I'd give you money because of the brains that's going into making those decisions. The decisions are the output. If I just look at a stream of past decisions, there's no way. If I just look at a stream of sausages, there's no way I can reverse engineer the sausage machine.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree with you totally. And it's very difficult for any individual to really understand any way that, you know, doesn't have the advanced knowledge. So what about research? You know, on your site, you have the tracking. You have the opportunity to, do your own personal tracking or look at others, et cetera. What kind of research is offered?
None.
Okay, not, that's good.
You know,
well, you have a glossary of terms. You have a glossary of terms.
I'm not even sure we have that. We're not. Well, I guess we do. One, but some of portfolio analytics. You know, we're not about that. And my view from the past, and you know, this is, I've spent a fair bit of time in the sort of financial information world, either as an investment banker or working for Thomson. My view is there are a lot of people do a lot of things really well, and why would we go out and recreate what other people elsewhere do really well? If you want to go and find sort of quasi-equity analysis, then, you know, go to Seeking Alpha, go to Multex, go to MSN Finance. Yeah, there's plenty of sources of good sort of research mm-hmm. that you can sort of get ideas from. If you want to go and find fundamentals, go to, you know, go dive down deep into SEC Online. Look at the fundamentals and the, frankly, I'd argue go right back to the source documents. Go to the 10Ks, 10Qs.
Right.
If you want charting, then jeepers, AOL's got a fantastic new charting piece.
All this new Ajax technology has really been amazing for this stuff. You know what? Hang on a second, because when we come right back, I want to ask you a question. I think that is really going to be the greatest opportunity for people, something very interesting that you offer, and that's the opportunity to make money from the people that you're tracking. In other words, the people that are being tracked and ranked, et cetera, could have the opportunity to make some money by through your system. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that in 1 minute. So hang on a second. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Call for your free brochure today. Toll-free, dial 888-964-7526. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We're back with Ricky Tata, and he is the CEO and co-founder of Covestor. Quickly, tell me how people that are on your site and members can actually make money from what you're doing.
Right. This is something we're rolling out in 2008. The idea is a very simple one. Frankly, if you manage your own money, there's a huge amount of productivity there that's being wasted, in the sense that, Andrew, you're managing your own money, you're managing clients' money. How does some guy in Madrid or in St. Petersburg who has some funds in the U.S. they want to put to work in the U.S., how are they ever going to find you? And if they do find you, how are they going to know who you are and put money to work alongside you? So, number one, the goal of Covestor is to allow you and anyone that's managing their own money to leverage the hard work they're already doing for themselves. And how do we do this? Well, ultimately, we're going to set up tracking accounts to allow investors to say, okay, now I've seen what Andrew's doing with his college fund or his personal growth fund. I'm going to put money into a separately managed account that will automatically track what Andrew does, and I will pay him a fee out of that account. And we manage the regulatory process. We manage the structured fee process. We just create, effectively, a platform that basically says, hey, if you're doing it for yourself, why not leverage what you're doing and let other people invest alongside you, or hence Covestor, invest alongside you and reward you if you're helping them make money.
That's great. That's neat. That's a unique twist. That's what I like about this.
Yeah, it's like all things, it's a very simple concept that is very powerful, because what you're tapping into is a lot of people's hard work that is being wasted. Let me get back to my example of my cousin. I mean, he's managing his own money. Frankly, I'd love him to manage some of my money, and it takes no more effort for him to virtually have me track him than doing it himself. And so the complication is, of course, managing the operation pieces behind it, to manage it securely, to manage it safely, to get everyone glad that they're getting what they're getting, and putting those pieces together. And that's what we're working on hard now.
Great. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, and we'll make sure to put some information on the show notes and some direction to Covestor. I think this is a great opportunity for my listeners to really check it out, because I think that you'll find a wondrous opportunity to see who's doing what and watch what they're doing, and also take a look at what you're doing. So, Ricky Tata, thank you so much for being here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, that's all we have today for the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 42. Thanks for joining me so much. And do me a favor, two things. I think it's really great timing to get a copy of my book. You know, that's kind of how we support this show, if you haven't figured it out yet. And go over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or to the Disciplined Investor at our site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. At Amazon's probably the best place. I think it's the cheapest there right now. And in addition to that, I want to remind you that we have that class coming up at Cyber Trading University to sign up for it. You want to learn a little bit? It's free right now. It's online. It's really easy to do. I think it's really cool technology-wise, too. Head over to the site and sign up for the basic course and the free course. It's totally free for the introductory course here. And finally, just to remind you two things. Number one, coming up, really make sure that you are stay tuned for this one. Chris Jolly, who is the head of the MSN or the Microsoft Money site, and he covers it all, and he's going to bring us some good stuff. And finally, I just want to remind you that if you like the show, do me a favor, tell a friend or two, send him an email, tell him, hey, listen to the show. Because, you know, the more people we have that are listening to the show, I think the better good we can do. And the better good we can do, I think the more prosperity we think we can really, really share and create for people. So thanks for listening again. This is Andrew Horowitz saying have a great week, and I'll see you real soon.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.